Before we begin with the learning today, I really want to make mention of a generous sponsorship by our weekly participant, Janet Grosser. I thank you for this meaningful sponsorship, Le'ilu Nishmas, your father, Pinchas Aryeh ben Moshe. His neshama should have an aliyah. And as I told you yesterday, he should continue to have nachas from the beautiful family that he has created and that you are perpetuating. So your family should just have simchas and nachas. I know your house is very busy now, but I'm happy that you're here, and your house should always be busy with wonderful things like this. So we spent time last week giving a general overview of the Tkufas HaTanoim, of the time period when the Tanoim lived. We spoke about the five generations that spanned that time period, and the upheaval, the tragedy, the challenge, the painful circumstance that they had to overcome. One generation after the next had to overcome so many difficult challenges, which brought us to the prince of Jewish history, really, to the prince of the Tkufas HaTanoim, who was Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. And that's really important for us to understand this week. That is the Mishnah that officially we're up to, if we ever get there. And I just wanted to give a background and understanding as to who Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was. There's so much that we owe Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. Without him, we would really have no Torah Shebaal Peh at all. Now you'll say life would be much easier if we didn't have a Torah Shebaal Peh. Life would be observed far differently than we do today. Rav Asher Weiss always told me that imagine if Moshe Rabbeinu would come down in our generation and spend the Shabbos in our community, or in any community. I think all of us would look at him and say, he's a Mechalel Shabbos. He's like, he's a real Shegetz. How could it be, Moshe Rabbeinu? You don't know how to keep Shabbos? Now, why would we think that? Because Moshe Rabbeinu himself observed Shabbos far differently than we do. Moshe Rabbeinu, in the times of the Torah, had 39 melachos, that I assume he knew what they were. But outside of that, there really were no Isurim Dirabanan. So there was no prohibition of Amir La'akum. There was no issue of Muktza. Moshe Rabbeinu, I would imagine, there was no Isur of Mekach U'Memkar. There was no problem to do business on Shabbos. So all of these are Isurim Dirabanan. Can you imagine? Everybody worked hard the whole week. And then on Shabbos, when they had off, they all went to the mall in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. It's amazing. In the days of the Mishkan, it seems that's the way everybody observed Shabbos. And imagine Moshe Rabbeinu would come down today and look around at how we observe Shabbos. He'd be like, why are you not touching that? Why don't you go do something today? Why are you going to shul? Why don't you spend your time doing other things? I'm sure he wouldn't say that. But it would be interesting for us to understand how much Torah Shebaal Peh has changed the face of Jewish community and the face of Jewish practice and Jewish custom all over the world for so many centuries and so many millennia, and it's something that has stuck, and it's something that we have observed, and it's something that we have accepted, and all of that is really due to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi is the one who edited all of the Mishnayos. The Mishnayos are the foundation of all of Torah Shebaal Peh. It's assumed that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi did not write all of the Mishnayos. He was the general editor of the Mishnayos project, let's just say, and he was the one who is responsible for all of that. And the Gemara says in Maseches Gittin, a profound statement. The Gemara tells us, if you look here in number Aleph, Mimos Moshe Ad Rebbe, from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, who really was the most significant leader of all times, but from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu until Rebbe, which was hundreds of years, that was a very long time from Moshe Rabbeinu's demise until Rebbe came to be, the Gemara tells us, Lomatsinu Torah Ugdula B'makom Echad. We do not find this blend, this combination, this synthesis of greatness, of nobility, of a sense of majesty that was coupled together with the scholarship and the wisdom, the unbelievable brilliance and expertise of Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's something that we don't find. The Gemara says Moshe Rabbeinu was who he was. And after Moshe Rabbeinu comes Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. And both of them were considered to be in some way the ones who were able to have this incredible combination of Torah Ugedula B'makom Echad. And this is what the Rambam says. You know, it's amazing. What would you think if you were trying to explain who Rabbeinu HaKadosh was? Who is necessary to compile all of Torah Shebaal Peh? Who is the one who's needed to write all of the Mishnayos? I would have said it's somebody who is an incredible genius, somebody who's an unbelievable Magid Shir, somebody who understands people well, somebody who really listens to other people's opinions, somebody who really takes opinions from others, whatever, everything you're going to come up with. But that is not the description that the Rambam gives us about Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. The Rambam writes, what was unique, what was special about Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi? I'll tell you exactly what it is. Writes the Rambam, Ish asher nimtza bo kol achamudos. Writes the Rambam, what was unique and special about Rabbi Yehuda Anasi was not the fact that he may have been a genius, not the fact that he was the greatest Talmud Chacham, the greatest Torah scholar. All of that may have been true and all that is nice, but that's not what made him so unique. What made him so special and unique was the fact that he was the one who had kol hachamudas v'hamidas tovas. The one who is ahead of others in life is not the one who is a genius. It's not the one who's more brilliant. That is a God-given gift. What is unique and special about the great leaders are the ones who have incredible midas tovas. Atche zacha bahem etzel anshei doro l'krosa rabbeinu hakadosh. Everybody in the generation, it just became the thing. Everybody referred to him as Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Why? Just because of who he was. He didn't demand that title. It wasn't given to him by anyone. It just became the thing to do. And that really speaks to the greatness of Rabbeinu HaKadosh. You know, I should not compare my father to Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, because there's nothing to compare. And what I just want to point out here is, I cringe when people talk to me about the greatness of my father. And about the greatness of Gedolim in general. I think people are so off the mark. They don't understand the true greatness of people. Maybe it's because they don't have first-hand interaction. They don't really see. The greatness of my father is not in the fact that he has a greater Torah scholarship than so many others around him, than so many of his contemporaries. That's not what makes him great. What makes him great is, I don't know many people in my life that I've met that have midos or sensitivity the way my father does. I don't know that many people that care so deeply about others the way that my father does. And to me, that's what makes him great. The fact that he happens to know a lot, there are a lot of people in the world who know a lot. There are a lot of very smart people. My father happens not to be a genius. My father works very, very hard and never wastes a second of his time. But what I find amazing about my father is his midos. I told a story a few weeks ago, and I promised myself I never would say it on recording, but here I am. So there was a few years ago, really, I hope I never forget the story. My father was called by somebody in Brooklyn, and he said that he was a chairman of the board of a certain yeshiva, and he heard that my father had a special relationship with somebody who he thought would want to give money, and he asked my father, I know you're not familiar with our yeshiva, but maybe you can make a phone call for me and ask this person if he'd be willing to be generous to our yeshiva. My father, anybody asks him to do anything, he does it. Doesn't matter what price he's going to have to pay for it. Doesn't matter how embarrassing it is for him. Everything. He doesn't care. If somebody asks him to help them, he'll say yes. Even to his personal detriment many, many times. All the time. So this chairman of the board asked my father to please make a phone call on behalf of the yeshiva. My father says, sure, no problem. Then my father says to me, you know, I was thinking about it. I give a weekly shiur in Flatbush, so I'm in Brooklyn every week. How about this week, instead of going at a certain time that I usually leave, I'll leave a half hour, 45 minutes early from my house, and I'll go and visit the yeshiva. This way, when I make the phone call to this person, I'll be able to say, you know, I went to visit the yeshiva, it's such a wonderful place, I met the boys, I was talking to them. It will probably be a better sell if I go and I say that I have first-hand experience with the yeshiva instead of going in blind. Fine. I think that's really generous and really nice. So that's what he said. This guy is like totally overwhelmed. He can't believe it. Like, wow, you're willing to take out of your schedule and come and visit just because I asked you. My father said, yeah, no problem. This is what we're going to do next Monday night. I'm going to be in Flatbush. I'm going to come visit. The next day, this was when I was learning with my father in yeshiva. So it's not a secondhand story. I was there when this happened. The next day, my father gets a call from the Rosh Yeshiva of this yeshiva. And he says, Rav Schechter, you know, we don't know each other, but I heard that yesterday you spoke to the chairman of the board and you told him you were going to come visit. It's really very generous. It's very kind of you. I just have a request. I would prefer if you wouldn't come visit next week. So my father said, why? I thought that would be helpful for the yeshivas. He said, I think it's a bad hashpah for my talmidim. I don't think it's good that they should be exposed to you. It's really not our hashkafa. It's not good for them to know who you are. It's better if you don't visit. I was enraged. I couldn't believe that this guy said this. And my father, without missing a beat, said to him, okay, no problem, so I'll call the person without visiting the yeshiva. No big deal. I was so upset. And I'm like, it's nice to be a good man, but this is ridiculous. Like, this person shouldn't get anything. Anyway, I had to get my mother involved. I said, Ma, Daddy might be great, but this is ridiculous. He's not calling. He's not doing this for this person. This is insane. So my mother got involved, and that was the end of that. And a few days later, I was talking to Rav Asher Weiss about it. I said, you know, this story is crazy. I asked him, what was my role? What was I supposed to do? Let this go through? I said, you know, he's right and she's right. They're both right. So he said, no, you're wrong. He's righteous and she's right. That's the answer. He's righteous and she's right. So anyway, I always think about that story because that's what makes a person great. That's what makes a person great, that they have such midos. A person could spit in your face. A person could call you on the phone and embarrass you and say something horrible like that, and you don't even flinch. It doesn't bother you at all. And it's something that I have found to be a tremendous quality of all great leaders. It's not just my father. It just happens to be that I'm closest with my father than anyone else. But it's something that the Rambam really outlines for us here. If you want to know the greatness of Rabbeinu HaKadosh, it's not the fact that he was a genius. It's not the fact that he was a greater Talmud Chacham than anyone else. It was the fact that he had kol hachamudos, that he had so much chein, that people loved him. And he had midos tovos. He had such tremendous character traits. He had such sensitivity for others. He cared about them so deeply. And because of that, his generation referred to him as Rabbeinu HaKadosh. So much so, the Gemara says in Maseches Sanhedrin, there was such an admiration. The members of his generation loved him and appreciated him so much that the Gemara says, when they used to have conversations with each other about Mashiach, and everybody used to talk, you know, what's going to be when Mashiach comes? Same conversation still going on today, and how, what's it going to look like, and who's the Mashiach going to be? Is it going to be from our community, from a different community? Are we going to accept him? Are we not? Anyway, the Gemara says that people used to say at the time, if Mashiach is somebody who's alive today, he has to be a Rebbe. Or it has to be somebody like him. There's no other way. It has to be that Rebbe is the Mashiach. It can't be. How could it be that somebody else in the generation who's not like Rebbe is going to be the Mashiach? And that was really a mark of the special appreciation and the unbelievable love that people had for Rabbeinu HaKadosh. So much so, the Gemara tells us that Rabbeinu HaKadosh used to travel for communal matters all over the place. And he used to have to go from one community to the other. There were meetings all over. And it says that he always did it on his own expense. And he said, I don't want to cost the tzibur money. It's not their problem to figure out how to get me there. Which really it is their problem to figure out how to get you there. But they chose not to. Yes, I find it crazy that my father's flown all over the world to speak and I always have to find him a ride to the airport. It's insane. If you're flying him out to go somewhere, number one, he's 80 years old, flying business. I don't know why he sits economy. Not just economy. He's always like in the bathroom, in the back. It's crazy. He's a Rosh Hashiva. He's 80 years old. You should maybe fly him like a mensch. But outside of that, maybe it's time that if you're bringing him somewhere, it would be the nice thing to also arrange for him to get to the airport. Not that his son has to go from Woodmere to pick him up from the house and drive him to the airport. It's a little strange, no? Isn't it? I think so. Anyway, so it says over here that Rabbeinu, my father, doesn't even see what's strange about it. He thinks it's normal. So the Gemara says that Rabbeinu HaKadosh used to spend his own money. He said, why am I the tzibur's problem? You know, I have to go and do things. It's not the tzibur's problem. And therefore, that was something also that just ingratiated him to so many others. They didn't feel burdened by the leadership of Rabbeinu HaKadosh. It's told, the tradition has it, that Rabbeinu HaKadosh was born on Yom Kippur. I guess that makes him very holy, super holy, I'm not sure. And just for context purposes, he was born around 50 or 60 years after the Churban Beis HaMikdash, which really ties into what we spoke about last week. And he was the end of the period of Tanoim. We spoke about the different generations of Tanoim. He was so profoundly impacted by the Tanoim. Rebbe says, Rabbeinu HaKadosh says, in Erev and Daf Yud Gimel, the Gemara says, Hai de mechadadna mechavroi, this that I am greater than all of my contemporaries. Why was it that Rabbeinu HaKadosh was able to rise and become the great person who he was? He says, Dir chazisa l'rameir l'achorei. Because I saw the back hand, I saw the back of the head of Rav Meir. And that made such an impression on him. He was able to spend time with the people, with the Tanaim, with Rav Meir, with the other great Tanaim of his generation, with all the students of Rabbi Akiva, and that is really what informed his life. That is really what was able to shape everything that he did and his mission. So much so, that after his lifetime was over, his greatest students were the ones who were the foundation of Talmud Bavli. His students were the beginning of the period of the Amoraim. So I'm sure many of us have heard of Rav and Shmuel. Rav and Shmuel are the greatest Amoraim, probably mentioned more often than anyone else in Shas, in Talmud Bavli, right there on every page. And Rav and Shmuel, the Gemara says, were Talmidim of Rebbe, of Rabbeinu HaKadosh. And that is the profound impact that he had. The Gemara says in Kiddushin Daf Ayin Beis, something that always inspired me If you look at number Gimel, the Gemara says that there is a continuity in Jewish history. And the Gemara says HaKadosh Baruch Hu never allows a generation to be orphaned. The Ribono Shel Olam never allows a generation just to be left hanging to whoever is going to pick it up. There is always a plan of who's going to be in charge of the generation. And the Gemara says that on the day that Rabbi Akiva died, again, we spoke last week how Rabbi Akiva's demise came about. Rabbi Akiva passed away as one of the Asara Haruge Malchus. He was somebody who died Al Kiddush Hashem. And the Gemara says that on the day that Rabbi Akiva passed away, Nolad Rebbe, on that very day, Rebbe, Rabbeinu HaKadosh was born. And the message was clear. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying, don't worry, you are not an orphan generation. You lost Rabbi Akiva, but don't worry, I have a plan. And the plan is, I've given you Rabbeinu HaKadosh, I've given you Rebbe. And you'll be okay, and life will move on. The Gemara says when Rebbe died, the same thing happened. The next great leader was born. And the next one, L'lamedcha, to teach you, She'ein tzadik niftar min ha'olam, at she'nivrat tzadik kamoso. Hashem never allows a generation just to be left hanging. The Ribono Shel Olam always ensures that there will be a Jewish leader to fill the void and to fill the loss, whatever it might be. And that is what the Medrash writes here in number Dalet. This is a very common problem. My father told me that after Rav Soloveitchik died, he found that many of his contemporaries had a very hard time transitioning because they were exposed to such a great personality in so many different ways, not just a great Torah personality, but a great personality in general, who was also a philosopher, and who was also a great genius, and who also understood politics, and who also understood the way of the world. So many different things were encompassed by this one person, and then that person passes away. Now, how do you transition from that to then a new era of leadership? It's very, very difficult. And who are the next leaders going to be? The next leaders are going to be the people who you were in class with. It's very hard. It's very difficult to then look at somebody who's your contemporary and say, that's going to be the person I'm now going to consult with. It's hard to transition to that kind of mindset. My father told me there are so many of his contemporaries who say, if the Rav was alive, you would ask a Shaila, but he's not here, so I have no one to ask. Really, you think we live in a Dar Yassam? There's nobody in the world you can ask? There's nobody in the world that you can consult with? And it's a common problem that we face. And the Gemara here says the same thing. I'm sorry, the Medrash writes, Dar Holech V'Dar Ba. Pasuk in Koheles tells us, Dar Holech V'Dar Ba. As we know, Jewish history continues to unfold. One generation is born, a next generation passes on. La'olam Yehei Be'enacha Dar Sheba K'dar Shehalach. But have faith in the new generation. Have faith and believe that the new generation is well suited for the needs of that generation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't just arbitrarily do things. There's a way in which the world runs, and have complete faith that things will be okay. I remember when I was in graduate school in Azrieli, so we all had to do model lessons for each other. We had to do model lessons in school also, but we had to do on each other. And one of my friends who was in the class at the time said, you know, I'm so jealous of the opportunities that our children are going to have that we did not have. And I said, what do you mean? He said, I look here and I watch our friends who give model lessons, and they are amazing. They are absolutely amazing. And again, my teachers, my Rabbeim, were great. But he said, this is a whole new level. The way that they integrate technology into the classroom, the way that they use examples from modern history and from the news and all the things that are going on, and they bring the Torah to life. And he said, I'm jealous of the opportunities that our children are going to have because the educators of today are so different than they were 50 years ago or 30 years ago. Everything continues to evolve. I'm not saying anything negative about those who were before us, but generations evolve, and it speaks to the new needs of a generation, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu planned it all out in advance. There's an amazing Gemara at the end of Maseches Menachos, where the Gemara tells us, Kal HaKelim She'asa Moshe Rabbeinu. All of the items that Moshe Rabbeinu produced in his generation that were to be used in the Mishkan are K'sherim Lo U'K'sherim L'Doros. So say, for example, Moshe Rabbeinu constructed an Aron HaKodesh, right? The Mishkan needed an Aron. If by some miracle we were to unearth the Aron of Moshe Rabbeinu and we were to find it, so we would then be able to use it for our Beis HaMikdash. Why not? Moshe Rabbeinu made a Mizbeach. If we were to somehow find that Mizbeach, we would be allowed to use it. The menorah, the shulchan, everything else that Moshe Rabbeinu made, we would be allowed to use. K'sherim Lo U'K'sherim L'Doros. There was one exception. One item that Moshe Rabbeinu made, that if we were to find it, we would not be allowed to use it. We would have to then create our own. And which one is that? The Gemara says, the Chatzotzros. What's so unique, what's so special about the Chatzotzros? The Gemara says the chatzotzros, the trumpets that Moshe Rabbeinu made, were only allowed to be used for his generation, and any subsequent generation does not have a right to use them. Why? What is so different? What is so unique and special about the chatzotzros? Why do we need to make our own? Rabbi Pelkowitz told me a number of years ago that perhaps the understanding is, I think he said it in the name of Rabbi Meir Shapiro, but he said that perhaps the reason why is because the chatzotzros were the mode of communication between Moshe Rabbeinu and the Jewish people. That was the way that Moshe Rabbeinu got his message across. Everything that Moshe Rabbeinu did, all of his service to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is the same thousands of years later. Nothing changes. We serve the Ribono Shel Olam in the same way. We read the same Sukkim and Chumash. Everything is the same. The Shulchan, the Menorah, the Aron, nothing changes at all. What does change is the mode of communication that we need to speak and communicate to our children cannot be the same as the mode of communication that Moshe Rabbeinu used to talk to his generation. It's just not going to work. It's not a condemnation on those who came before us. It's just the reality that our generation today speaks a different language. Our generation today thinks differently. It's not the same as it was in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. It's not that the Torah changes. It's that our mode of communication needs to evolve and needs to change and needs to speak to the desires and to the understandings of a generation in which it lives. And therefore, the Gemara says, the chatzotzos really were symbolic. The chatzotzos she'asa Moshe Rabbeinu, if we were to unearth them, if we were to find them, we would not be able to use them, because the symbolism in that is that we, as leadership in every generation, and leadership doesn't mean a rabbi, leadership means every parent, every grandparent, needs to understand the language that the next generation speaks and needs to understand how to communicate with them effectively. That's what the Medrash writes here. Don't say, La'olam yehe be'enecha dar sheba k'dar shehalach. Shelo tomar, don't say, you know, I would love to learn Torah. I would love to spend my day engaged in Avodas Hashem, but Ilu haya Rabbi Akiva kayam ha'yisi kara lefanav. If Rabbi Soloveitchik was still alive, of course I would go to the shir, of course I would learn Torah. If Rabbi Akiva is alive, of course I'll learn from him, but he's not. So, I guess we're just living in a subpar generation right now, and that's the way it's going to be, so forget it. That's where my Judaism starts and ends. I knew a great person, that person is no longer, and I guess that really hinders my ability to be a perfect Eved Hashem. Writes the Medrash, you cannot think that way. Chein hu omer, that's what it says. Al tomer mashahaya mehayam marishonim. How many people who are a little bit older than me spend their time saying, you don't know what it used to be like. Right? You don't know, we all had parents or have parents. Every parent speaks that way. You don't know what it used to be like. It's true. I don't know what it used to be like. But I do know what it is like now. And I do know that the Jewish community is in good hands. And I know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu set it up that way. And I know that the Ribono Shel Olam wants it to be this way. And He gave us the leadership that is relevant to our needs. Is there a greater gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have given than that? And that amazes me. That really amazes me. I once had a conversation with my father. My father really doesn't make time to write. He doesn't write a lot. It was a tremendous chiddush. It was very unlike him. During Corona, when we really pressured him a lot to come out with tshuvas and to write, and the reason was because we were getting hundreds of emails every day that were all the same question from every rabbi all over the world was asking the same thing. What do we do about this and how do we handle that? So I said, instead of having to respond to every single person's email, I'll read all the emails, I'll give you a bottom line of what everybody wants, and you'll write a response. So it took a lot of convincing that that's what he should do. But in the end, that's what he did. But really, in general, he does not make a lot of time to write. And it bothered me. I said, Daddy, you have so much to share. You have so much to write. Why do you not write? Why don't you publish Svarim? That's something that all of us can enjoy. My father told me an amazing response. What amazed me more than anything else was that it was clear to me that he obviously thought about this in advance. And it was something that he came to a conclusion didn't make sense for him. And that, to me, was more amazing than the answer that he gave. So I was comparing him to Rav Asher Weiss. I'm very close with both. And he's just cranking out Svarim every few months. There's a new thing coming out. And I said, Daddy, it's not like you don't have anything to say. You have plenty to write. So why don't you publish? Why don't you write? And he said, I was born in this generation. And I communicate Torah effectively based on the needs of this generation. My job, my tafkid in the world, is to teach this generation as much Torah as I can. Why would I write a sefer? Why would I spend time writing? I would spend time writing in order to perpetuate that for the next generation. But he said, who said the next generation is interested in my style? There will be leaders of the next generation who they're going to be interested in. I don't have a right, he said, to take away from my time of Harbatzas Torah and this generation that cares for it, to go and do it for the next generation that I'm not even sure will be interested. That was amazing to me. That was an absolutely amazing response. So I repeated that to Rav Asher Weiss. I said, you're not going to believe what he said. Because he told me, you have to push him. You know, you really need to push him. So I did. And I told him the response. And he said to me, no. But if you write a sefer that's going to be a classic for all generations, then that's not, you know, then there's a big difference. It's not like you're writing a sefer that's going to sit on the shelf somewhere. You're writing a sefer that's so foundational, so fundamental, that even future generations, of course, they're going to use it. Of course, they're going to reference it. My father said, maybe that's his svarim. Mine, I don't think we'll be here forever. I don't think people will really care. And therefore, my primary role, my primary obligation is to teach the members of this generation that speak this language, that are interested in this style. To me, that was so profound. It amazed me. It amazed me more than the answer was that he actually thought about it and he had worked out a reason why he thought that this was not a good way to spend his time. And again, that's exactly what the Medrash says here. There's a beautiful sefer called Eim HaBanim Smecha. I don't know how many are familiar with it. But the premise of the sefer is just an amazing story. The Talmud Chacham who wrote it was a great Jew by the name of Rabbi Sacher Shlomo Teichtal, who perished in the Holocaust. He was born in Hungary, and he was a great Talmud Chacham, but he was a student of the Munkacs Rebbe. The Munkacs Rebbe was the greatest anti-Zionist at the time. Not for political reasons, because he was concerned that the Zionists were not religious, they were anti-religious, and he was afraid that if people are going to be a part of this movement, who knows what's going to happen. And unfortunately, we know there were terrible consequences that came about as a result of those who followed the early Zionists. There were great gifts that came about as a result as well, but that was the debate. That was the debate in Europe. Should we take their contribution and run with it, because in the end of the day, we'll get Eretz Yisrael, or maybe we will? Or should we just squash it and really have no part in it at all because we need to save the Jewish future? So this really was the major debate. The Munkacs Rebbe was one of the ones who was so anti, was so against the entire movement at the time. And he was encouraging everybody to ignore all the excitement that was going on, that was surrounding everything that was happening in Eretz Yisrael at the time. So the Eim HaBanim Smecha, Rav Teichtal, originally was born into that school of thought. And as the years went on and as he experienced the Holocaust, he realized this is all a mistake. There's no way. This cannot be that this is what God wants from us. It's impossible that the Ribono Shel Olam is doing what he's doing and that he wants us to ignore Eretz Yisrael. There's no way. And he wrote a sefer called Eim HaBanim Smecha, which has become a classic about his feelings toward Eretz Yisrael and about what the Hashkafa is supposed to be, how we're supposed to view our relationship with the anti-religious, anti-God Zionists, or with the country of Eretz Yisrael that at the time was not yet established, how are we supposed to reconcile? How do we deal with that? And what is our relationship with Eretz Yisrael in general? And he makes many different arguments. He actually brings an argument from this week's Parsha, where the Torah says, the Shichno Sidrushu Uvas HaShama, that we have an obligation to go to Eretz Yisrael, we have to travel there. And he said that means we cannot just wait for a big eagle with big wings that's just going to carry all of us. We have to actively pursue. We have to actively be engaged in wanting to go to Eretz Yisrael. And that really is one of his arguments. He brings many, many different arguments to explain why he thought it was right. But what I found to be one of the most important arguments was, he says, I lived in the generation that is experiencing all of this. I'm living now. I am one of the leaders of today's generation. And I see what's happening. I see how history is unfolding. The Munkacs Rebbe is not alive now. He's not alive, so how can we use his opinion? And say, again, it doesn't mean that once somebody dies, we disregard their opinion. Chalila, it's not what it means at all. Rav Moshe Feinstein died 30 years ago. And mipiv anu chayim, we live off of him. But when you're talking about an issue in Hashkafa, and you're talking about what should the next step of the Jewish community be based on the circumstances of today, You cannot live in the past, he said. You can't say there were many great people 50 years ago who felt this way. Yeah, but they're not alive today. They don't understand that the circumstances changed. And we cannot put their opinion as being more valuable than the opinion of a leader who's alive today. And the argument that he makes is, I'll read it one line from you. He felt that had the Munkacher Rebbe been alive in his generation, had the Munkacher Rebbe been alive, by the, just to understand how much the Munkacher Rebbe like hated this movement, I once read the tzava, the will, that the Munkacher Rebbe left over for his family, for his children. And in, I think, the first line of the will, he writes, anybody who ever participates in any part of the Zionist movement is like out, not just for now, but forever. Like, it's really, and it's not, a political issue. It was how he felt based on the way he understood the circumstances and the danger that was lurking ahead. That's how much he hated it. But says Rabbi Sachar Shlomo Teichdal, again, he made a total transformation in his own life, and he felt very differently after he experienced the ravages of the Holocaust. And he writes there that his belief was, had the Munkacher Rebbe been alive today, Gam hu hayamode, he would also have agreed, Shenazov es artzos hagola v'nelech le'Eretz Yisrael. He also would have agreed, had he been alive then, that we should leave Europe and we should go to Eretz Yisrael. He would have given up on his whole hashkafa. Why? Because circumstances changed. And therefore, Rav Teichdal argues, if we have leaders in this generation that have the ability to lead, we cannot base our opinions based on something that somebody said years before when they're not living today. It's just not the same. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a certain gift that he gives every generation for certain leaders to understand the goings-on of the time and to respond accordingly. And really, that stems from this Gemara, where the Gemara says the day that Rabbi Akiva died was the day that Rabbi was born. Can you imagine the day Rabbi Akiva died? Imagine what people thought. Forget it. We're finished. Who is ever going to replace Rabbi Akiva? How will we ever have Torah leadership again? How will we ever have a Jewish community that functions normally? And the answer is, you'll be fine. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's job is to make sure that the Torah will continue, that the legacy of the Torah will continue. And that is exactly what we learn from that story. The Gemara tells us about the incredible anava, the incredible humility of Rabbeinu HaKadosh, of Rebbe. The Gemara tells us in the Yerushalmi that even though, you know, it would be natural for somebody who writes a book, especially as foundational, as fundamental as the Mishnayos, you would think he has a right to include his name in there somewhere. You would think maybe there would be an acronym, or he would call it Mishnayos to Rabbeinu HaKadosh. He would call it something based on his name. We have such a thing, Mechilta to Rabbi Yishmael. We have a medrash that's named after the Tana who wrote it. So why didn't Rebbe put his own name in there? And not only that, the Gemara says in Maseches Nida that when Rebbe used to have a disagreement with others, and then he quoted the disagreement in Mishnayos, which, by the way, he's only quoted 30 times in the Mishnayos, even though he wrote them. He could have put his opinion in every Mishnah, but only 30 times, where he thought it was important to insert himself. Otherwise, he left himself out. He took no pride. He took no special mention of himself, even though he is the one that authored, that edited all of the Mishnayos. And yet, the Gemara tells us that when Rebbe used to quote his opinion together with someone else, he would warn everybody, Shadivrei chaveirav nirin yoser midvarav. He says, we had a disagreement. This is what I felt, this is what he felt, and I think he might be right. It seems that he's more correct than I am, but I just want to present to you the full story. So that's why I'm giving my opinion and his, but I really think my friend is more correct. That shows the tremendous humility, the unbelievable anava of Rabbeinu HaKadosh. The Gemara tells us amazing stories about the death of Rebbe. When he passed away, he died a natural death, and the Gemara says that when Rebbe died, butla kedusha, there was a special sense of holiness, of nobility that was lost in the world when Rebbe passed away. The Gemara says when Rebbe died, butla anava, there was nobody in the world that was able to replicate the sense of humility, of modesty that Rabbeinu HaKadosh had. And that really was the legacy of Rebbe. So much so, the Gemara tells us a very unusual story. The Gemara here writes in Maseches Ksubas that before Rebbe passed away, here we can read it together. Tana Rabbana, number hey. Bishas piti raso shal Rebbe. When Rebbe was on his deathbed, he said, Libini ani tzarech. He says, I need to talk to my children. So his children all gathered around his bed and they were all talking to each other. And Rebbe says to them, Amar lahem, number one, more than anything else, my instruction to you is, Hizaru bekavod imchem. Whatever you do in life is fine, but make sure you treat your mother with respect. So again, also, a very instructive comment. He doesn't say that your job in life is to perpetuate my legacy and to live on the Mishnayos and to make sure that something becomes of them. I gave my life to this, and this is my project, and this is my thing, and it's you, my children, who I hope are going to carry it on. No. Most important thing to him was, Hizaru b'kavod imchem. Be careful that you treat your mother with dignity and respect after I'm no longer here. That's number one. Number two, he says, Ner yehei dalek b'makomo. I want there to be a candle that will continue to be lit in my seat. Shulchan yehei arach b'makomo. I want the table to be set every day. I want you to set the table in the house. It should look nice and put together. And mita tehei mutzaz b'makomo. My bed should always be made. Now that's a very unusual request. And the Gemara says, why did he want all of this? Why was it important to him that the table should be set? And the Gemara then goes on to say that God gave him an unbelievable gift. And that gift was that he had the opportunity to come back to this world every Friday night. Every Friday night, Rabbeinu HaKadosh used to come back and visit his family and spend the Shabbos meal with them. So he said, I would appreciate it if the table was set when I came back to visit. So what happened? The Gemara says, and this is a very, very rich topic of conversation in the Rishonim and the Achronim. They all try to figure out how to make sense of this story on many different levels. But the Gemara says that Rebbe came back every Friday night and he used to make Kiddush for the families. Oh, how did he make Kiddush for the family? He's not alive. He's not chayiv in Kiddush. They are chayiv. Oh, whatever. It's a shir for another time. An interesting discussion. How could it be that Rebbe made Kiddush when he wasn't alive? Well, that's not my question. My question is, how could it be that Rebbe showed up if he wasn't alive? It's a bigger question to me. Anyway, but the Gemara tells the story that every Friday night Rebbe used to come back and he said, you know, let's spend time together. And he used to sit with his family every Friday night and they would have a Shabbos meal and he would make Kiddush for them. And it was really nice. It was wonderful. Until one Friday night, there was a neighbor of Rebbe's family who knocked on the door as they were sitting together. And the neighbor knocked on the door. They needed to borrow some sugar, some salt, whatever it was. And the woman who answered the door said, one second, you know, I'm sorry, they're busy right now. I don't want to disturb. I don't want to go in because Rebbe's here. And the neighbor said, Rebbe's here? What are you talking about? He died 20 years ago. And the Gemara says that Rebbe realized that it became known, it became public knowledge now that he came back. And Rebbe said that he no longer wants to have this opportunity to come back ever again. Why not? What's so terrible if somebody knows? So Rebbe said, because it's going to make people think negatively of others. Why is it that only Rabbeinu HaKadosh has a right to come back after he dies? What about my Bubby and my Zaidi? And what about my Rabbi? And what about my Rebbetzin? And what about this one? I thought they were great. It turns out they're not as great as I thought. Because only Rebbe's able to come back. Where are the rest of them? So really, my grandfather, my grandmother aren't as great as I thought? So Rebbe said it's going to reflect poorly on everybody else. And therefore, I never want to come back. That's the kind of personality Rebbe was. How amazing. Here he is, he has an opportunity to come every Shabbos, spend time with his family, to uplift all of them and to uplift himself. And yet, he chooses not to do it because in some way it's going to reflect negatively on others who aren't given this gift. And others, we mean 99.999% of every other human being that ever died. And yet, Rebbe thought that that was something that was important to him. What was very unique about the lifetime of Rebbe was, the Gemara in Maseches Avodah Zarah tells us that he had a very close and friendly, peaceful relationship with the emperor at the time. So again, in contrast to all the other Tanaim who we spoke about, again, we were told about Yanai HaMelech who killed tens of thousands of people in the days of the Tanaim. We spoke about the Romans, and we spoke about all of the different kings who came and who wreaked havoc in Eretz Yisrael and in Yerushalayim, destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, Bar Kokhba revolts, all of these different experiences. Rebbe then comes onto the scene just 50 years later, after the Churban Beis HaMikdash, and somehow he develops this unbelievable relationship with Antoninus, who was the emperor at the time. So much so that the Gemara tells us in Maseches Avodah Zarah that every day Antoninus used to come to visit Rebbe. Wasn't the opposite. Antoninus used to come to the house of Rebbe, and he would then feed him. He would give him breakfast. He would help him out. And then it says that when Rebbe needed to get up on the bed, and sometimes the bed was too high for him, Antoninus would bend down on the floor and put his hands on the floor to help Rebbe be hoisted up onto the bed. That's the kind of relationship they had. And that really speaks volumes about the lifetime that he lived and the great gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him, that he didn't have to overcome all of the horrific and terrible challenges that so many others had to face before him. And by the way, the Gemara says, immediately after Rebbe's passing, we were told that everything reverted back to what it was. And the Gemara says that once again, there were painful and difficult challenges, and the Jews were exiled from Eretz Yisrael. That is when they all went to Bavel. That is when Golus happened. Right after the completion of the Mishnayos right after Rebbe died. That is when everything fell apart. Huchbalu Hatzaros, the Gemara says, things became compounded, it intensified, all the tragedy became bad once again, and that is when everybody was banished from the land of Eretz Yisrael, and no longer was Eretz Yisrael the focal point or the highlight, the spotlight of the Jewish community any longer. I say all of that because the Chafetz Chaim brings us to an amazing point, and the Chafetz Chaim says, understand the hashkacha in all of this. Imagine if Rebbe lived at a time when he had to deal with persecution as well. Imagine if Rebbe lived at a time when he had to overcome the challenges of all those who came before him. Imagine if he lived through Bar Kochla and through the Churban Beis Hamikdash and through the Asar Haruge Malchus. Imagine if he had to deal with all of that. Do you think he would have had the headspace to author the Mishnayos? Look how HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, and look at the Hashgacha that he gives to a generation. He understood that it was important that the Mishnayos be written. There would be no continuity of Jewish history without them. And it's because of that that HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided to give Rebbe a peaceful life, that he should have the headspace, that he should have the wherewithal to be able to do this tremendous task that he took upon himself. Let's read the words of the Chafetz Chaim. It teaches us, Liros eschar mesiras nefesh al kiyum haTorah. Writes the Chafetz Chaim, you go through history and you see that at every juncture that Jews were willing to be moser nefesh to keep the rules and the laws of the Torah miyad la'achar mikein, immediately following that ha'isapricha ruchanes gedola, there was an unbelievable explosion of ruchnius that came as a result. Is there a greater example than our generation? Look what has happened. There was never anything as devastating as the Holocaust in all of Jewish history. And on the flip side, there has never been such an explosion of Jewish life as there is today. And writes the Chafetz Chaim, Kachaya achar girish svarad. This is exactly what happened after the Spanish Inquisition. She'amdu anake ruach la'am Yisrael. That right after that, we had all of the greats of the Jewish people who lived at that time, in medieval times. In the 1500s, we had the Shulchan Aruch was written. And after that, he says, we had the Gzeres Tach V'Tat. Those were horrific times as well. After that, we were blessed with the Shach and the Taz. And writes the Chafetz Chaim, we need to understand, look at the second paragraph, Hasiyata Deshmaya Shezachala Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi Melamedes. This great gift of Siyata Deshmaya, of divine providence that was given to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi to live the life that he did, teaches us, Ketzad Hashgacha El Yona Shomeres Al Am Yisrael. Look how HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks after the Jewish people, L'Bal Tishtake Chalila Mimenu HaTorah. That the Torah will never be forgotten. And therefore he says, this is why we find, it's not coincidental, this is why we find it was designed that way, that Rabbeinu HaKadosh lived a rather peaceful life because HaKadosh Baruch Hu had a job for him. And the Ribbono Shel Olam knew it's the only way it's going to get done. And that is why HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him that gift. I always feel one of the most powerful psukim in all of Chumash, and how can you say such a thing? Every pasuk in Chumash is important. But one of the most powerful psukim in all of Chumash is in the end of Parshas Vayelech, when the Torah says, if there will be a time when the Jewish community will be experiencing horrific circumstances, terrible things, one after the other, the answer says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is va'ansa hashira hazos lefanav la'ad. This Torah will be here forever. Ki lo sishachach mipizaro. The Torah will never be forgotten from the Jewish people. It just won't happen. My grandfather used to tell us how he remembers going to the Lower East Side to buy, when he was in yeshiva in the 1930s, to buy a copy of the Ketzos HaChoshen, which is a very important sefer for everyone who learns in yeshiva. It's something they use all the time. And he told us that the Mocher Svarim was laughing at him. The one who owned the store was laughing at him. And he asked him, why are you laughing? And he said, you're so silly. You're the last person in the world who will ever buy the Sefer Ketzos HaChoshen again. And my grandfather said, at the time, he believed him. Who would have ever thought that anything would come after them? My father tells us the story all the time about Rabbi Yisrael Shurin, who was a great Talmud Chacham who lived in Yerushalayim at the end of his life. And my father went to visit him many, many times. And he was in Rav Soloveitchik's kollel in Boston in the 1930s, before Rav Soloveitchik came to YU. Chaim Soloveitchik, Rav Soloveitchik's son, says those were his father's golden years. Once he came to YU, everything went downhill. I don't know if that's true or not. I have no idea. But he learned, it's known that he learned with a small group of Talmidim at the time, and they were learning through Kachim and very unusual Masechtas at the time, and Rav Soloveitchik had so many Chidushim. And my father asked Rabbi Shurin, can you give me the notes? We'll publish them. We'll work on them. We'll have people look them over. And he said to my father, you think I have notes? And he said, why don't you have notes? You sat with Rav Soloveitchik for so many years in Boston. You were a small group of guys. Of course you were learning. He said, the only point of taking notes is that someone in future generations will look at them. Why would I have taken notes? We believed we were the last Jewish people to ever learn Torah in the world. We believed there was nobody else. And the Chafetz Chaim points out to us, that's exactly what this pasuk says. It's so powerful. Ki lo sishachach mi pizaro, HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises us, never will the Torah be forgotten. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will always make sure that regardless of what happens, the Torah will live on forever. And it's miraculous. And it doesn't really make sense. There's an unbelievable letter that's written by the Stipler in one of his Sfarim, where he goes through Jewish history and he says, if you try to understand how many times our Torah has been compromised, try to appreciate the fact that it has been challenged so many times and contested and questioned from one generation to the next. You know, we read, or we don't read, but we should read, the stories in Tanakh. And we think, life was great. They had Nevi'im, life was wonderful. Life was everything but great. Writes the Stipler, if you just take a little glimpse into what was going on in the times of the Shoftim. Right? We have, in the beginning of Navi, it's Yehoshua, Shoftim. So right after Yehoshua ben Nun passes away, they have Jewish leaders that are set up all over the Jewish community. In the days of the Shoftim, the most prevalent thing at the time was not Judaism. It was Avodah Zarah. The most exciting thing to do at the time was to have unrestrained Avodah Zarah in the Jewish community rampant all over the place. That's what everybody was doing. This was, can you imagine, right after Yehoshua ben Nun passed away. So you had Yehoshua ben Nun, who brings the Jews into Eretz Yisrael. They watched the miracles. They saw everything that happened. They lived through the experience of the Midbar. They now come into Eretz Yisrael and they see incredible miracles. They know it makes no sense. They know HaKadosh Baruch Hu is taking care of them. And yet, somehow it became the thing to do that everybody was serving Avodah Zarah. And that was not something that just happened and then went away. That was rampant for hundreds of years in the days of the Shoftim. Can you imagine what the leadership was saying at the time? There's no future for the Jewish people. How could it be? This is what everybody's doing. Nobody believes in God. But yet, that was the phenomenon. So much so that it says that there were Jewish kings who were so excited about Avodah Zarah that they shut down all the shuls. And they decided to make an edict that every Jew had to have an Avodah Zarah in close enough proximity that he can serve. And they set up guards along the way that nobody's allowed to go to a shul, nobody's allowed to go to Yerushalayim, because we serve Avodah Zarah here. This is what we do. That's what the Psukim tell us. That was just one part of Jewish history. That was just in the days of the Shoftim that led into the days of the Jewish kings of the Malachim. The Gemara then tells us the stories about the Tkufa of the Bayis Sheni, and that's something that we spoke about last week, about the Tkufa of the Tanaim, what they lived through, what they had to overcome. The Greeks, they had to overcome the challenges of the Kusim, challenges from within, challenges from without. Vitimu kol hashmanim, right? That's not just a line that we say that they defiled all of the oils in the Beis Hamikdash. That means they defiled the Jewish people. The Midrashim tell us very clearly what was going on at the time. There was terrible devastation. And yet, guess what? The Torah lived on. And the Torah was not forgotten. And despite all of that, we continue on in Jewish history. Let's not forget Yeshu HaNotzri, who became the leader of all of Christianity, the founder of Christianity, lived at the same time period of the Tanaim as well. Imagine, there was this huge faction. He was a Jew. There was a huge faction of the Jewish community that decided to become Christians. Why? because they were very enamored by this personality. All of that going on, and yet we have the Mishnayos being written. We have the Zohar HaKadosh was written at the time. We have all the Midrashim were composed at that time. After everything falls apart, after the Churban Beis HaMikdash and the Jewish people totally disintegrate and they're scrambled all over the world, that's when we have the Talmud Bavli. Can you imagine? That's when the Talmud Bavli was written, when Jews were in Galus, when there was no central authority, when everybody was all over the place, when they were no longer unified around Beis HaMikdash and Eretz Yisrael. That is when all of Talmud Bavli was written. Can you believe what our lives would be without a Talmud Bavli? That is the promise, Ki lo sishachach mipizaro. 1095 to the end of the 1300s, we have the Crusades. That was in the medieval period. Do you know who lived in the time of the Crusades? Unfortunately, many, many Jews died and they were persecuted. But do you understand who emerged during that time? What would our community do without Rashi? Where would we be without Rashi? So the Ribbono Shel Olam made sure that as all of that was going on, he gave us the gift of Rashi, of Rabbeinu Tam, the Rambam, the Ramban, the Rashba, the Ritva, all the Rishonim lived at the time of the Crusades. Do you not see the promise? Ki lo sishachach mipizaro. Again, Jewish communities were wiped out. There was horrific devastation. There were terrible things going on, but God's promise still endured. Lo sishachach mipizaro. Not only was Torah not forgotten, Torah was enhanced to levels that it never was before. The Mishnayos, the Gemara, the Rishonim. You go a little bit further in Jewish history, and you have the Gzeros Tach V'Tat, and you think about what happened then in Magenza, in Toledo, in so many different communities, in Amsterdam, and yet, with all of that, we have the Abarbanel. Who hasn't heard of the Abarbanel? The Abarbanel, one of the most important commentaries on Chumash, was written at the time. You go a little bit further to the 1500s, and you see what was going on at the time, and you see Rabbi Yosef Karo somehow emerges and writes the Shulchan Aruch. Where would our world be without a Shulchan Aruch? At the same time that that was happening, the Rama lives in Krakow. The Beis Yosef Shulchan Aruch lives in Sfat. The Rama lives in Krakow, both in the 1500s at the same time, writing the same book, writing the guidebook for all of Jewish history. You go a little bit further, and you have the Vilna Gaon. Life was not simple. Life was not simple. And you have Rav Shamsher and Rafael Hirsch fighting against the Reform and the conservative movements and all of these new splintered factions that were going head to head with the traditional Jewish community. It's told over there, Reb Chaim Volozhiner, again, it's written in Svarim. Reb David Lifshitz, who was one of the Rosh Yeshiva in YU, said when he gave a hesped on Rav Ruderman, who was the Rosh Yeshiva in Baltimore, Reb David Lifshitz said that there was a tradition, there was a Mesorah, that Reb Chaim Volozhiner, who lived in the 1800s, Reb Chaim Volozhiner said in the 1800s the following. He was the greatest student of the Vilna Gaon. So Reb Chaim Volozhiner said, Yom Yavo, there will come a day, V'za'azua yifkod es ishius yadus Europa. In the 1800s he said, in prophecy, there will come a day when all of the prominent leaders of Jewish life in Europe will be destroyed. They will all be killed. Not only that, he said, there will come a day in Europe that kol mostos ha-Torah yecharavu v'ye'akru. His prophetic words were that every shul, that every yeshiva, that every Beis Yaakov, that every school will be destroyed, will be decimated, it will not be there. Ach lo ha-Torah ti'aker. Reb Chaim Volozhiner said in the 1800s, I know that this is going to happen, but the Torah will never be destroyed. Chalila. Takuma Tiel Yeshivas Begalos America. Reb Chaim Volozhiner, who could have said such a thing? In the 1800s, Reb Chaim Volozhiner said, the next phase will be a resurgence of Torah life in America. That's what he said before anything. Galus Asher Tia Maso HaAchron Shel Am Yisrael Kodem HaGeula. That will be the final stop that the Torah will go to before HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us a Geula. Is there anything more powerful than the promise that the Ribbono Shel Olam left us in Parshas Vayelech? Ki lo sishachach mipi zaro. That the Torah will never be forgotten. I was once talking to Rav Asher Weiss about it. The problem is, and this is a problem all of us should think about, that The Torah says that the Torah as a whole will never be forgotten. It doesn't say that my children will be Torah observant. It says that as the Jewish community, there will be continuity. Now that's a little bit depressing. What do I do about my own family? Again, I love the Jewish people, but I love my children. I want them to perpetuate this kind of life, this kind of legacy. So how do you respond to that? We're going to end in 2 minutes. And he said, you go back to the beginning of that pasuk. The Torah says here, Ki lo si shachach mi pizaro, but what are the words right before that? Va'ansa hashira hazos lefanov la'ad. If your entire life, the Torah is a shira, if your children see that this is the most joyous and festive and exciting part of your life, then you have that promise, Ki lo si shachach mi pizaro. Our children all want to lead happy lives, just as all of us do. We don't want to be depressed. We want to be happy. If our children see that this is the most meaningful part of our lives and that the Torah to us is a shira, that the Torah is something that is exciting and uplifting and meaningful and gives us purpose in life, then Ki lo si shachach mi pizaro is not just going to be something that is a promise for the Jewish people, it will then be a reality for my family as well. You ever notice when we make a Berachas HaTorah in the morning? The Gemara says when you make a bracha, you're supposed to say one item in each bracha. You can't get up in the morning and say all the Berachas HaShachar in one thing. Like if I get up tomorrow morning, I say, you know, I want to save time. So I'm going to say, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, Shelo Asani Goy, Shelo Asani Yavid, Shelo Asani Yisha. It doesn't work that way. You have to say each one separately because each bracha is supposed to be one item that is listed and nothing more, nothing less. And yet when we say the Berachas HaTorah in the morning, we say, thank you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for giving us the Torah. Then we say, Ha'arevna Hashem Elokeinu, please make it sweet for us. And then we add another idea, which is, V'niyah Nachnu Etzatzayinu, please not only help us, but make sure that this legacy will be perpetuated, make sure that our children will also want this. There's like so many things, discombobulated, so many things that are just thrown into one bracha. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't go with the general rules of brachas. And the answer is that all of that is one theme. We ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give us the privilege of studying and living His Torah. We ask Him in order to do that, HaRevna Hashem Elokeinu, make it sweet for us. We don't like to do things that aren't sweet. Nobody enjoys that. Nobody enjoys doing something that is not pleasurable. We all want to have pleasure in life. So we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we want to keep Your Torah and therefore make it sweet for us. And if it's sweet for us, V'niyah Anachnu V'tzetza'inu. It's all one theme. If our children see how much we appreciate the Torah, if they see how much we love it, that is all part of our Torah experience. Then it's a given. V'niyeh anachnu v'tzatzayinu. It's a given that our children will want to follow. If they see their parents enjoy it so much, why wouldn't they want to live the same kind of life of pleasure and enjoyment and fulfillment? And that really comes to this promise here. Of Ki lo si shachach mi pizaro, and you see it accented so profoundly in the life of Rabbeinu HaKadosh, in the life of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. There was so much upheaval before him, so much devastation after him. Klal Yisrael goes into galus the moment that he dies. Everything goes in a downward spiral, but yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised Ki lo si shachach mi pizaro. And that is why, writes the Chafetz Chaim, in the days of Rabbeinu HaKadosh, of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, there was that unbelievable gift of Siyata Deshmaya that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed him to have the serenity, to have the quiet, to have the calm, to have the good relationships with the emperors of his time, because the Ribbono Shel Olam knew that the Mishnayos needed to be written in order for the Torah to continue. And that is the legacy that he leaves all of us, and that is the great gift that all of us continue to enjoy until this day. Amir Tashem, next week will be our final.